Hi again, everybody, and welcome to the Amerinds Podcast, episode 98. It's Friday, July 4th, 2008, and that makes it Independence Day. So I'd like to start by wishing all my American friends and family around the world a very happy Independence Day. Hope you have a great weekend. Today's topic is politics, specifically the presidential election, and I'm joined by my good friend Jason as we discuss again the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Today's episode is sort of a scene setter as we talk about some of the things that we will be talking about in future episodes. And at the end of our conversation, I have a phone comment and then a few other miscellaneous bits and pieces, and then that'll be it for today. Right now, here's the conversation with Jason. We're now getting into the business end of the elections, with the primary season over, and things couldn't look better for the Democrats at this stage. Barack Obama keeps polling well. Pew Research has found that 81% of Americans say the country is on the wrong track, which is the highest number in the 25 years they've been asking the question. So on the face of it, it looks like things have got to be good for the Democrats. Or are they? Well, today we're going to talk about that, and joining me is Jason, who has not been here since February. Welcome back.
Oh my, thank you very much. My God, it's been that long.
Yes, well, it has. I looked it up.
I've been busy. We've been busy. So I went to England, and it's quite interesting that they just had the first Zimbabwe election when I was there, and now that they've had the second, the really fake one, that SOB is now still in power, which is rather unfortunate, but it was quite interesting how much of a play that got.
Yeah.
There. So, anyway.
Well, Mugabe made a career out of attacking Tony Blair and still does, blame all of his troubles on foreigners, despite the fact that he himself has taken Zimbabwe from being the breadbasket of Africa to being its basket case. And I've long said, I don't really want to dwell on international politics, but I've long said that the only way he'll ever leave office is feet first. He will die in office.
Oh, yeah, one way or the other, yes.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah. Back to American politics. We are sort of getting to the business end of the campaign now, in the sense that the primary season is over, and we're moving more towards the real campaign. And I'm sure there are a lot of people in America who are saying it's about bloody time, too.
Well, I think we're already in the real campaign. It started already.
Yeah.
You know, there are, Barack Obama has ads on already.
Yes, I have read that.
So,
now, one of the things I did want to touch on briefly was Obama's decision to avoid, to not take part in the public financing of the campaign. Of course, the McCain campaign was all over him about that. And first, I want to give my two cents, and then you can chime in with what you think. But at the end of May, the Republican Party had raised something like $50 million to the Democratic Party's $4 million. And in terms of personal fundraising, the Obama and McCain campaigns were roughly equal. Obama was ahead, but not by much. So what that means is that if McCain was clearly in a position to take public finance because his party was $50 million ahead of the Democrats, and
well,
if Obama had agreed to that, he would have started with a $50 million deficit, which I think would have been just patently stupid.
Well, I'm not sure where that figure came from, but that's the Democrats have been out fundraising the Republicans for a long, long time. I don't know what that figure is based on, but certainly the congressional coffers of the Democratic Party are, it's like 10-1. You know, they are forcing them to spend all this money. You know, they've lost three of these special elections, and at the congressional level, the Republicans have almost no money at all.
Which is
so
a good thing.
I'm not, because when you referred to that, and I sort of went to that article, and it really doesn't say where that money is going to. Is that the Republican Party? It was not very specific, and I was thinking, like, well, that's not what I've heard. I've heard that the fundraising on the level of for the Democrats has far exceeded that of the Republicans. So that's...
Well, the Democrats have been focusing primarily on congressional fundraising, as you say. The figures I was talking about come from the Federal Election Commission filing reports, and that just deals with the party in general. And some people say, oh, yeah, well, that's no big deal, except that the parties are free to spend whatever they want on promoting the party and promoting their candidate and so on. And it's independent of what the candidate does. As a matter of fact, they can't have direct coordination with the candidate in terms of,
right,
will you do this and we'll do that, that kind of thing. They have to spend it where they want to. But the main thing that the parties tend to spend the money on is get-out-the-vote efforts, which in the case of the Republicans apparently is voter suppression, but that's a whole other issue. Yeah, so that's where those figures come from, and that's essentially what it's talking about. But I think you're absolutely right that the Democrats have a big lead in congressional fundraising, particularly because people tend to want to back winners, and the Republicans, frankly, aren't seen as winners.
Yes, I totally agree with that. The public financing thing, he can raise more money than McCain.
Yeah.
Go to it, let's win. And the fact that he's running ads now, I find it rather ironic that the Republicans are bitching about this when they've historically they've been able to raise money hand over fist as comparison to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Although this is the first time, I guess, that a presidential candidate has opted out of it. I looked at this, I read the news stories, and I kind of went, well, okay, I suppose you can say this is sort of a flip-flop, but otherwise it doesn't really phase me one way or the other. From the simple standpoint of the Republicans are going to work the money. I'll step back. The money's going to be worked in no matter what.
Yeah.
So it would be one thing if this was these rigidly adhered to, and you know they didn't have all these odd organizations falling out of trees, you know, running ads and raising money, and it's this sort of pristine holier than thou attitude from anybody about oh he's raising the money. It's just like you know, it's get over it.
Yeah, and
you know, it's out there. It's available. They're going to get it one way or the other. At least he's honest about it. I'm going to go out and I'm going to raise the money.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth pointing out that the vast majority of Obama's contributions have been $100 or less, and I'm absolutely sure that that's not true for McCain and certainly not true for the Republican Party generally. Most of their money comes from special interests, PACs, lobbyists, law firms, those sorts of things, corporations, and that's not been true for the Obama campaign. So it's doubly disingenuous for the Republicans to criticize Obama for that, when they know that they're going to be raising money from the fat cats and the special interests, and Obama's raising it from ordinary people.
Well, and even if he was raising it from the fat cats and special interests, at least this way you know where every dollar's coming from. There's not sort of this surreptitious wink and a nod sort of thing about spending the money. So
yeah. Although having said that, it's obvious that there are going to be huge numbers of 527 special interest campaigns against Obama in support of McCain. And I mean, obviously McCain is duty bound as a so-called reformer to disavow those, but to go beyond that, to try to do whatever he can to forbid them from engaging their campaigns. But we know damn well he won't.
Well, you know, to be totally honest on that, having sort of watched this, at what point is this beyond either candidate's ability to control? You know, some stupid person opens their mouth and inserts foot. You know, you can denounce, you know, say, oh, that's terrible, that's awful, I'm, you know, distancing myself from this person. But how, you know, every person, oh, every single surrogate, it's been, you know, well, what, it's Wesley Clark this week, last week it was Charlie Black, then it was that, you know, and Reverend Wright, and then that Catholic priest, and then,
Hagee, or however you pronounce his
right,
name.
Right, and then somebody else. And at some point in time, you simply have to go, you know, there are going to be SOBs and jerk that support this guy who have platforms. And to spend all their time, you know, distancing themselves from these people and saying, yes, that was a stupid, moronic, idiotic, dumbass thing to say, at some point in time you just have to go, you know, this is going to happen. And if it's truly over the top and egregious, or if it's somebody that's directly associated with the staff, that's like, you know, Black's comment last week about the terrorist attack, then at some point then you can say this. But you know, it's Joe Blow from somewhere, and you just at some point in time you have to go, you know, is he responsible for every pot somebody pees in?
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
So at some point in time, you simply have to go, oh, he should denounce that person, or he should distance himself from that person. Well, you know what? If you're doing that, then I'm sorry, that's all they're going to do.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot more important things to consider or you know, to be talking about. So I take this with sort of a grain of salt, it is. Within context, and these things have to be brought up. But, you know, oh, Obama must strongly denounce him. Oh, McCain must strongly denounce him. And it's like at some point in time, you just go, gas is $4.10 a gallon, you know, so Reverend Wright's a nutcase, or Hagee's a nutcase. What are you going to do about lowering gas? What are you going to do about all these other things that, I'm sorry, are much more important? This is the sort of gotcha, stick the microphone in somebody's face type of thing that the press loves and blows. Doesn't necessarily blow away out of proportion, but this is an easy thing to splash onto the page as opposed to trying to explain a more complicated or nuanced policy. You know, what are we going to do? And so it does depend on the context. It does depend on who it is and who said it. At some point in time, you just have to go, enough is enough.
Yeah, go on. The McCain campaign has a vested interest in trying to discredit Obama based on people around him, because that distracts attention away from the issues. Because no matter how much he may deny it, McCain is basically running for Bush term three. He's running on Bush's record, not his own, because he's never been anything other than a senator in terms of government. And he's pushing a barrel uphill, because he's trying to promote policies that are desperately unpopular. The only issue where he gets any traction whatsoever is on so-called security or national defense or something like that. So he's going to keep pushing these so-called character issues, because he hopes that will distract people from realizing how bad the Bush-Cheney regime has screwed things up and how he's only going to make it worse. But be that as it may, one of the things that both candidates are now focusing on, of course, is trying to select their vice presidential nominee. And, of course, it's now widely assumed that Wesley Clark is off the list for Democratic choices. A lot of names have been bandied about. It's also been said that Hillary is firmly off the list as well. Do you have any gut feelings at this stage about who Obama will pick as a running mate? Or maybe what kind of person?
Really, right now, I don't have any idea. You know, it's I don't believe the Democratic convention is until September, and that's several generations in politics away, to be totally honest. He probably needs someone with some sort of foreign policy experience, as long as it's not Sam Nunn.
Yes.
And I don't know. It you know, this is a very much a cat and mouse type game of, obviously at some point in time, obviously he's going to pick somebody, but what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? Where do you see yourself? Are you on the offensive?
Hmm.
So maybe we pick bandied about our couple of people from Virginia, the governor and one of the senators, the one who's a Democrat, Jim Webb, as you know, okay, so we put Virginia in play, or I think it's way too early to sort of tell, and I think it's probably way too early, you know, for McCain, except, you know, someone with a pulse on his end. And, of course, that can cut both ways as well. That they have to be sort of, there's very much sort of this undercurrent of, well, someone young, probably a governor. I mean, how young do you want them to really sort of play up the notion of the huge gap in ages?
Yeah.
You know, or how old McCain is, which I think is kind of a crock, to be totally honest. I would be more concerned about his actual health.
Well, I'm concerned about his age and his health combined, primarily because of the fact that in the year 2000, a lot of people in the center and the left never gave George Bush a second look. They thought, how could that idiot ever be elected president? They didn't pay any attention to who had been installed as his running mate. If people had paid attention, they would have known exactly what the country was in for in a Bush-Cheney regime, because Cheney's career is all about imperialism abroad, you know, trying to expand the American empire for American riches. And also suppressing dissent at home, because that interferes with expanding the empire. His whole career, going back to the Nixon administration, has been about that. Nixon, Ford, Reagan, the first Bush, and Congress. All those issues, all those eras, he was involved right in the front line of suppressing civil liberties and freedom, and of expansionist military adventures abroad. So we should have known what the country was in for once President Cheney, Vice President Cheney, was in control. And I think because of that, we have to pay really close attention to who McCain picks, because that is certainly a huge risk considering his health history and his age. And we have to pay close attention to who he picks as his running mate. Now, in just the end of June, June 26th, he was in Ohio, and he was meeting with so-called social conservatives, prominent social conservatives, whatever that means. and he pledged to consider an anti-abortion running mate. And I think that he probably is considering that. Whether he's stupid enough to pick one whose sole credential is being anti-abortion is a whole other issue.
Well, to be totally honest, who the hell is pro-choice in the Republican Party?
Well, there has to be somebody.
You know, I think we could name them on one hand and probably have three fingers left over.
Yeah, probably. Well, McCain has done a lot of lately, of course, to try to pander to the fundamentalist Christians in the party, because that's what that meeting is about, really. And he also pledged that he would be strongly anti-gay in the future. And, of course, later that day, he issued a statement expressing his strong support for the California ballot initiative and a similar one in his home state of Arizona. And then on Sunday, which large parts of the U.S. was celebrating as Gay Pride Day, he met with Billy Graham and his son Franklin. And then Franklin later praised McCain for his personal faith and moral clarity, which are all code words to the fundamentalists. He's talking about anti-gay and anti-abortion and those kinds of things.
And surreptitiously, he also met with the log cabin Republicans.
What I was getting at, basically, is that he is trying to pander to the fundamentalist Christians because he knows that that's a strong base of the Republican Party, even though they're a tiny fraction of the electorate overall. And he also knows that they don't trust him. They don't trust him as far as they can throw,
right,
which obviously isn't very far.
Right.
And so a lot of the names that are being bandied about are people that we've already heard of, like Mitt Romney, for instance, which personally I can't see because McCain and Romney hate each other.
Well, that's not the case anymore.
Oh, they've kissed and made up, have they?
Well, yes. I think that is a huge mistake.
I do, too.
If you want to alienate the people you're trying to build bridges with,
yeah,
the far right, the Christian far right, Mitt Romney is a horrible choice. He is a horrible choice because of one thing. He's a Mormon.
Yeah. And he's also anathema to the center as well. So if he's trying to appeal to Hillary Clinton Democrats, that ain't going to be the way to do it.
No, I mean, I don't see what, I mean, this whole notion, and he could help carry Michigan. Well, Michigan's economy is in free fall. Granted, there's sort of Democrats, there's like a Democratic governor and several other high politicians there are Democrats, but I cannot for the life of me seeing how putting Mitt Romney on the ticket helps. I think you know, he did not run a particularly good campaign, but he lost because he's a Mormon.
Yeah.
Very plain, very simple. As one of the quotes was that I read, you know, from some fundamentalist preachers, like, he's trying to pass himself off as a Christian, and he's not. End of story.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And for similar reasons, I can't see him putting Huckabee on the ticket either, because Huckabee is a whack job, and he's from a tiny state that is basically insignificant in the overall scheme of things. He can't carry enough votes in big states, Huckabee can't, in order to help McCain. But he would be a divisive figure. I mean, somebody who doesn't believe in evolution and believes that the world was created in 7 days and it's only 6,000 years old is not going to play well with the majority of Americans who are a bit more rational than that.
Well, I don't understand your point there. Oh, right. Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
So, I don't know. I tend to think that either his choice is going to be somebody we haven't heard of yet, or it'll be somebody we don't know a whole lot about, like, what's his name, Paul Entey from Minnesota, or somebody like that.
The governor of Florida, Charlie Crist?
Charlie Closet Case Crist?
He would be an excellent choice. He would be an excellent choice.
I don't know that he would be very popular with the Christian right, though, considering all of the gay rumors swirling around him.
Well, yeah, that's very true. But that would be a very strategic move. Of course, Chris has now endorsed drilling off of Florida, which might not be too popular. But
no.
I think he, if you're sort of looking for the electoral map where you now have places in play that have not been in play for the Democrats, like Virginia, like North Carolina, like maybe Georgia. The Republicans need to shore up their base in Florida. And that's sort of a counter. But that is an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, that could very well be. But also, of course, in November, it's not just the candidates. And of course, we're just speculating about who could or could not be the running mates at this point. We won't know for several months yet, probably. But also, there are a lot of ballot initiatives, and of course, the recent Supreme Court decision. All of these things could impact on voters. Now, in the case of the gun decision from the Supreme Court, I personally don't see how that can have any real impact on the elections, because it's not like people can go to the polls to vote against the Supreme Court or anything like that.
Oh, I totally disagree on that completely.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I think it can have huge ramifications. I would just like to say that I am so thankful for Justice Scalia for this opinion. However, I think that this notion that the government has any right to tell me what type of gun or weapon I have. I'm measuring my backyard now and seeing if I can fit a howitzer in it, and I'm thinking maybe I could buy one on eBay, and then I could teach Sam how to use it.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know me, Sam is my cat.
Yes.
So I thank you, Justice Scalia. Here's the thing, what I think is important about it, is John McCain has come out and said, yay, Ross, his boomba, great decision. Well, if he is going to play to moderate voters, you know, the independents, one of the single most important demographics, suburban women do not, I think probably the majority of them do not like this issue.
Yeah.
They're probably for some sort of gun control. So he needs to be really careful how he panders. Panders to the NRA on this issue, because I am sure this will come up one way or the other, and people will ask him questions about it. You know, what's reasonable?
Yeah.
And I don't think you can. You know, what's reasonable? What are reasonable exceptions or rules or regulations that a government can impose? I think there's a whole lot of stuff that can be, associated. And the fact that he says, oh, this is a great decision, you know, and he's going to, be appointing members of the Supreme Court like this.
Yeah.
It's quite funny, because all of a sudden, all those conservatives, all those activist judges on the Supreme Court, making up new rights out of whole cloth. Now the left has to shut up about strict constructionists, because it's somewhat hypocritical. Oh, no, it's completely hypocritical. And the right has to shut up about activist judges, because they had one just now give a zinger of an opinion.
Yeah.
So,
well, the right only complains about activist judges when they're ruling in favor of fairness and justice. When it rules on their behalf, they're perfectly happy with having activist judges.
Well, it's an even more basic thing like that. You know, one man's pork is another man's bacon.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it goes down
to.
Yes, it is on that level, but it's even on a more basic level.
Yeah.
You know, even lower down than that. So I think that's, I think it could be problematic, because I think people are going to ask him that question.
Yeah. And of course, on my blog, I've been scathing in my criticism, both of the decision and of the court majority generally. I have said, and I will repeat it again, I'm sure, that I think that Roberts and Alito are the most unqualified people ever to be elevated to the Supreme Court, and they were elevated only because they were far-right ideologues. Alito has written that a woman has no right to an abortion. Roberts and Alito both are in favor of this bizarre unitary executive theory that Cheney has been pushing so hard, basically to make the presidency a dictatorship. And McCain thinks that these are great examples of judges. So we know that if McCain becomes president, he will appoint certainly two, probably three justices just like them, and which means that the Supreme Court will be locked into a far-right end of the spectrum. I mean, far, far-right, not just conservative, but far-right.
Well,
for probably 50 years, because he's not going to appoint old people.
I think it's very possible, unfortunately, that McCain could win. However, I think the Democrats are going to crush the Republicans. I think essentially everything, if trends continue, everything's going to break the Democrats' way. Will say, however, one sort of additional note on the decision about the gun ban, and that was sort of poor head counting on the part of the District of Columbia elected officials. They should have seen this as a real possibility and maybe had done, let's see how we can all alter the law somewhat so that we don't have to go to the Supreme Court. And continuing to talk about that, and I think how it can have an impact on the election, is if the NRA overreaches.
They already have.
Because, of course, they never do. Here's the thing that I think in the short term, this helps them a lot. However, in the long term, they need to look at the court, too, as well. They know, I mean, obviously there are four people, the people who dissented on this decision, who are going to allow any sort of reasonable amount of rules by the government to govern guns, you know, registration, waiting periods, background checks, stuff like this. And I have to assume, because of the tone of Scalia's opinion, although it was rather vague, it wasn't specific, that, you know, this reasonable, you know, reasonable type rules, that you're going to pick up at least one or two other people. So the notion of, and I hear, I think this is what I thought about this, what I think is important about it, is that I think probably the vast majority of people, or a large majority of people, don't have opinion on guns one way or the other. They don't interact. It's not, you know, they're not hunting and, you know, or they're not exposed to violence. And they're kind of like, well, yeah, you know, But then, especially what the people who are for some sort of legislation on guns can point, it should point out, like, well, now they have this right. And so people are going to, well, they have this right. Well, what's wrong with a background check? What's wrong with the waiting period? It's sort of like the the pro-abortion people. You know, oh no, can't be. It's strict. It's 100%. And then people kind of go, well, what's wrong with? I'm not advocating this, but it's sort of like, why isn't parental notification okay if the person is a minor? Why isn't there necessarily a waiting period? Why isn't, you know, the partial birth, which is sort of a bogus type issue, but again, it's this notion of you seem totally rigid and unopen to any sort of things that are seen as moderate or sort of middle of the road,
well,
or sort of checks and balances.
And it's bigger than that too, because really there's no such thing as an absolute right of any kind. Even freedom of speech has limits. And so
fire.
Exactly. You can't shout fire in a crowded theater, and there are restrictions in every freedom that there is. Convicted felons can't vote, for instance. But I think you actually touched on something earlier that I think could be the crux of it for this election, and that's talk about the NRA overreaching. Within 15 minutes of the decision, gun nuts in Illinois had filed suit to overturn Chicago's handgun ban, which has been there for 25 years or so. And the NRA also filed suit in California to allow, in San Francisco, to allow people living in housing projects to pack guns, to have guns.
Right.
Now, I think most sane, rational people would think it's probably not a good idea to increase the number of guns in public housing projects.
Well,
so if they continue to do this kind of thing, there could be a reaction where voters go to the polls and say, I'm not voting for the Republicans, they're all gun nuts, or whatever.
I think it could have some impact in the short run. It's longer term. But also what's very interesting, and which is sort of alluded to and was sort of talked about when they were covering this decision, this directly applies to the District of Columbia, which is a district essentially governed by the government of the United States of America.
Yeah.
It's not a city in a state.
It's not a state.
And so
either.
I'm saying it's not a city as in Chicago or San Francisco or New York, which are in states.
Yeah.
Actual states, and that this might be looked at. This whole issue might be looked at differently if it's, you know, separation of powers, all, you know, stuff like that. So that there's more stuff that
There will be a lot more litigation around this, that's for sure.
Well, yeah.
Like in the case of Chicago, for instance, it could go to the Illinois Supreme Court that rules that no, Chicago has the authority to do that under what they call home rule authority. They have the right to ban guns, and that's the end of it. And then they'd have to try to appeal to the Supreme Court to get them to rule that the Second Amendment somehow overrides the state constitution.
Right.
And that gets into a whole new issue there.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Because if they overrule that, they can overrule anything.
Well, and who does this bring into play? It sort of almost switches. It could be quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. But in addition to that, of course, there are ballot initiatives that some people think will affect this whole thing. For instance, well, both California and Arizona will have ballot measures to outlaw same-sex marriage again. And there are a number of people who think that in the case of California, that it's not going to end up helping the right wing, although they think it will. And you have Barack Obama, who's come out against the amendment finally. And, of course, John McCain is all for it, as he would be. And even Arnold Schwarzenegger is opposed to the ballot initiative.
All I can say about this is, why can't they figure out how to get a decision that's in an odd numbered year after a presidential election?
It would have helped.
I'm thinking, who is focused on the family paying off to get these things to happen in the order in which they happen. Like, Massachusetts before the 2004 election, right? Now, like, you know, just because I'm paranoid, it doesn't mean people aren't after me. And
exactly.
I'm just kind of going, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah.
Could we, like, figure out how to do it in 2009? Not 2008?
Yes, that would have been helpful.
And, well, and I sort of looked at all the pictures, and I'm thinking, wow, look at all the middle-aged white people.
Yeah.
Look at all the middle-aged white people, and they're talking about, oh, yes, we flew out from New York, you know? And it's like, so you're rich, middle-aged white people. Okay, I was just kind of like, is this like another right for the elites? But my main sort of reaction is like, timing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, obviously, this is what should happen, and this should be what occurs. But it's just kind of like, please, could you just? We don't want John McCain to be elected president of the United States.
Yeah. Strategically, it would have been better if it had been a different year, or
right.
after November,
yeah.
anyway.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so, and you can't always control these things, but, you know, a little bit of foreplanning.
Although in the case of California, in their defense, it's entirely possible, probable even, that they would have gotten the ballot initiative regardless. And at least way, voters are going to have to be faced with the question, well, should we invalidate thousands and thousands of legal marriages, or should we just let it go when obviously nothing happened to Massachusetts when they legalized it? I'm reasonably optimistic that this time the forces of darkness will fail. Of course, I could be wrong, but I think that since the overall trend at this stage still favors the Democrats and favors progress, that the voters of California, in addition to delivering their electoral votes to Barack Obama, will also defeat the amendment. Because I think the time for the right to start losing has arrived. You know, they've had it their way for years and years and years, and I just don't think they can sustain that anymore. Not when you have Massachusetts that has done just fine, thank you very much.
Well, it's a quarter of a century since Ronnie.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
It's over a quarter. Yes.
And
so, I mean, I don't. I think it'll probably lose as well. But again, I just looked at that and I went, timing, people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yes, this is
timing.
Very true. Well, unfortunately, at this stage, we don't really know what's going to be happening. It's too far out from the conventions, let alone the election. But basically what we're trying to do today was just sort of raise some of the things that are going on in the background and to talk about some of the things that are going to be discussed as the both the conventions and the real, in quote marks, real campaign. People can't see yet, I'm making air quotes. as that gets going.
Sure you are.
But we're going to be talking about these issues more in the time ahead, and we won't wait so long for the next discussion.
Because the election will be over.
Exactly. It wouldn't be a good idea.
No.
But thanks for joining me today. And
great, as always.
We will have the next one much sooner.
Okay, that sounds good.
So why don't you tell the people where they can find you?
Where they can find me. You can find me at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com. And I have all sorts of fascinating, interesting things about living in Washington and all the fun things that are going on in my life, like getting that howitzer for that backyard.
And, of course, Sam the Cat.
And Sam the Cat, yes. And my perpetual serving of jury duty, which I have to go and do tomorrow.
The never-ending story.
Three times in 4 years. Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
They got a live one. Okay, yeah. Well, thanks again, and we'll do this soon.
Great.
Well, once again, I'd like to thank Jason for joining me today. We'll probably do our next political update in about 3 weeks' time, probably the last week of the month. At least that's what I'm tentatively planning on. We'll see how it goes. You know, things can interfere, like jury duty. But that is the main topic for today. But before I go, I'd like to play a phone message, because I don't like to hold those over if I can help it. And I'll play that now.
Hey, Arthur, this is Peter from Atlanta, also known as Apollonius. I was just calling because I finished listening to your most recent episode, and I thought it was wonderful. It is helping me get through a day where I have somehow come down with a touch of plague. So I have a fever, but it's one of those things helping me, I guess, maintain lucidity and consciousness and all that fun stuff. And also, I just wanted to mention that you said that you probably didn't think a lot of Americans knew what the Canadian National Anthem is, and I was saying I knew that was the Canadian national anthem, and actually the reason I knew it is because of South Park, because they make fun of Canada so much, and since they always seem to make Canadians break out into the national anthem, I know how the tune goes. Just wanted to let you know, see if that kind of, like, you know, it manages to correct your thinking on it, but at the same time correct it in a bad way. And sorry if I'm not making any sense. As I said, I'm feverish and crazy. But otherwise, I enjoyed listening to your show, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Peter. Peter's podcast is called They Don't Know, and I actually subscribe to it. I've been working my way through the older episodes and working my way forward, and but I'm enjoying what I'm hearing so far. And actually, I should have probably thought of the South Park connection. One of my all-time favorite movies is South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut, the movie, all the Blame Canada and all that sort of thing. I thought I was in hysterics in the theater the first time I saw it, so much so I had to go out and buy the DVD. But anyway, that is it for this week, everybody. I'm not going to go over any written comments today. I'll go over that next time. And next time, of course, is episode 99. And as you may recall, from episode 100 onwards, my show notes will only be posted on the new site, which is amrinspodcast.com, and I'll no longer post any show notes on my blog. Just a little note to say that it's posted is all. So if you want to leave a comment, go to my new site, amrinspodcast.com, where you will find the show notes for this and every other episode going all the way back to episode number one. And of course, you can listen online or download any episode you so choose. And there's also, of course, a link in everyone where you can subscribe in iTunes. And of course, that will also take you to the place where you can leave a 5-star review for the Amrins podcast. But that is it for today. Do leave a comment, send an email to me at arthur@amrinspodcast.com. Or ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.